Let's just talk a little bit more about you and what happened to you.
I think I need to mention that my father and and my uncle and the war. I
mean, okay, if you want to say that bit now, that's fine.
The background to it is that my uncle, my mother's brother, Albert, who I was named after, was killed. We knew that during the war. We didn't know the full story. I mean, but sort of 40 years on, I used to own a travel business here in London, and one of the first things that I did when I bought this business was to take the entire staff on a fact-finding weekend, because Gibraltar was one of the destinations that we would feature, and so was Tangier. And we arrived in Tangier on the ferry, and the Mons Calpis it was then. And as we were coming off the ferry, the guides were there, sort of pushing and trying to get hold of your passports, and which is part of the culture of Tangier. And of course, this cousin of mine who was with us took exception to us, and I said, "It's all right, let him take all our passports. He will see us through." And true enough, and this guide saw us through the immigration process very quickly. And then he said, "Right, what do you want to do?" And I said, "Well, look, we would like a tour of Tangier, but we want to have lunch at a particular hotel, the Minsa Hotel." Part of the tour was he took us to this cliff, and below this cliff there was this bay, and he was explaining how the Germans' warships would sort of take shelter in this bay and wait for the British to come out of Gibraltar, and at that point they would encounter them. And as he started talking about the war, I said, by the way, I mean, this guy knew I came from Gibraltar. I said, "My uncle died here." "Oh," he said, "not Albert, Atias," which was my uncle. I mean, this is 40 years on. I said, "Yeah, that's right. Did you know?" "Did I know? He was my best friend." And this guy then said, "You see, I've got no teeth," and he had no teeth. This guy said, "Yeah." He said, "I lost my teeth in the same bomb that killed your uncle." And then he explained what had happened. He was the chauffeur, or the driver, for the British ambassador at the British Embassy in Tangier. The Gibraltar Special Police as part of their brief, would look after the ambassador and the embassy, you know, protect the ambassador and the embassy. And those policemen would come over from Gibraltar on a 2-week stint. The story then goes on that, if I can just take one step back, my father had met my uncle Albert, and they became friends as policemen. My father was interested in going out with my mother, and she apparently kept saying no every time he asked her for a date. But eventually she relented and she said, "Yes, okay, we can go out on Friday," or whatever day it was. And on that day, my father was due to go to Tangier for his 2-week stint. So he went to my uncle Albert, who was his friend, and said, "You know, your sister, after all this time been after, she's just accepted to go out on Friday," or whatever day it was. "And that's the day that I'm due to go to do my duty at the embassy. Would you swap over with me?" And my uncle said, "Yeah, okay, I'll do your shift," and then you can. It was that uncle of mine who, part of what they, the troop, the group of policemen used to do is take the diplomatic bags for the ambassador. And it was on that diplomatic bag, apparently, that the Germans had planted the bomb, intending to kill the ambassador. But it went off prematurely, and it killed my uncle and a few others. And apparently we knew a little bit about the story, but we didn't know the full fact. For a start, we didn't know that the actual bomb had gone off as they were coming off the ferry in Tangier. And this guide, who was the ambassador's driver, he had been sent by the ambassador to pick up the police coming, the chaps coming off the ferry, to transport them back to the embassy, and he told me that that he was standing with the car door open and but behind the door, and that door saved his life, because when the bomb went off and killed my uncle and a few others, the door protected him from the full blast, and that's where he'd lost his teeth in the accident. So and then he said, you know, I'll take you to the grave, and he took me to the war cemetery in Tangier, and he went straight to my uncle's grave, and he said he was such a great guy, such a gentleman, I would be like a valet to him, and he would pay me 10 shillings a week and I would look after him. Apparently my uncle enjoyed the nightlife quite a bit, you know, the nightclubs of Tangier, and he would sort him out of the nightclubs and all that kind of thing. And so that's a fascinating story that came on 40 years ago. And if my uncle had not changed shift with my father, then I wouldn't have been here, because it should have been really my father, not my uncle.
Yeah, I think it's amazing. It's a really moving story.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, so it happened that first time. So, you know, I wonder how your mother felt that she'd lost her brother,
but imagine,
gained a husband,
or
gained a boyfriend.
She gained a boyfriend. She also gained a son, in a matter of speaking, because my cousin Robert was already born, and my uncle Albert had married a Bulgarian lady, and she died from pneumonia or some illness. So he was left with Robert, my cousin. And when, of course, my uncle was killed, when Albert was killed, Robert was brought up by my mother and my grandmother. So he became like a brother to me, and we are still like a brother.
And where's he then? Is he in Gibraltar?
He lives in Spain.
Oh.
He lives in Estepona. And recently, of course, it was through this chap in Tangier that I found out that there was a plaque dedicated to the people that were killed by this bomb, including my uncle, and this was kept at the police headquarters, the security police headquarters, which was up on the rock. And I knew that at the time that was going to close down, that headquarters, they were going to be moved from there. So I went back to Gibraltar, I spoke to the commissioner, or the superintendent of this police, and said, you know, about the plaque, and he said, yeah, it's there on the wall, and we're going to transport it to our new headquarters, wherever that's going to be, but we'll make sure that it comes with us. But I arranged through the governor, who I knew well, for it to be put up in King's Chapel, which is where it is now, because that's
that's an appropriate. Mm.
And over the years, we kept the story alive. And last year, or 2 years ago, they opened another. They unveiled another plaque for this incident and for those that were killed in the below the Parliament in Gibraltar. And there was a ceremony where the the families were invited, and they unveiled this plaque, and you know, that all came about 50 years later, after we went to Tangier on a day visit.
It was obviously meant to be, wasn't it, somehow?
It certainly was. Yeah,
really.
So that was
really interesting.
We found that the true version of what had actually happened,
absolutely, yeah, more details you never would have known. Gosh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So we just need to talk, I think, a little bit more about you and how your life progressed after.
Well, I mean, my life progressed. I mean, I left my mother more than my father, I should say. I was very upset with my mother because, under false pretenses, she brought me and my sister to London. False pretenses, they said, we're going on holiday to see Nana and my grandmother and my grandfather, who had immigrated back to London and living in this Jewish home that I've just mentioned. and my mother was a favourite, very much a mother's girl, you know. So we came to London under the pretext of we are going on a holiday. I think she had other ideas. So my father didn't come, but all of a sudden our holiday just kept getting longer and longer, and unknown to myself and my sister, my mother had been writing to my father saying, "Oh, I really would like to stay here." And next thing I know, one evening we were having dinner. We used to live in Euston. We were having dinner. It was a ground floor house room, looking out to the street, and I'd be sitting at a table having dinner, and I said, it's my father. And he was out there with two suitcases. He had packed up everything and he joined us here in London. So my life then remained here in London from the age...
How old were you?
I was 12 then, and I finished off my schooling here. I didn't go to Gibraltar from the age of 12 to 16. Then I went to Gibraltar for the first time with my grandparents. I went by a cruise liner, a ship, and soon after that, of course, we had our problems with Franco, the Gibraltar politics that has never been too far away from us. And at the age of 17, I started a group called the Gibraltar Group here in London, the Association of Gibraltarians. The idea was to... There was lots of people wanting to leave Gibraltar who had never been out of Gibraltar except during the war, because the prospect of a close frontier was not something that appealed to them. And we started this association here that to provide help to people who wanted to come and live here and provide help in finding accommodation, jobs. That brought me into focus into a public life, because I also introduced charter flights. I mean, charter flights were unheard of, but I introduced charter flights to allow those people in Gibraltar to be able to afford to come to London, which was the obvious link with a close frontier. And a very successful period for this association in helping Gibraltar. Charter flights became 1, 2, 3, 4, or something. We're running about, it's all voluntary, and lots of volunteers helping me. But it brought me to public prominence, and that continued through my very early, my late teens, early 20s, and until I was, I started my business very early. I was very successful in business, started here in London.
You were organising the charter flights when you were a teenager?
Oh, yes.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And fascinating. I mean, that's a book in itself. Day I'm going to have to.
I'm just going to ask you. I mean, there's so much to ask you, and I know I'm conscious of time. But I mean, do you think was there something in your family that sort of led you into public life somehow? That, you know, what? Why would you have done that and not 100 other people, 10 other people?
Passion. But that's not just to me. It's a passion that a Gibraltarian has. Look, we're having a lot of difficulties with Spain now, currently. There was an article in El País, which is the Times of Spain, about me and the success that I've had and the importance of the work that I do here in London in obstructing Spain in everything they've been trying to do politically. And, you know, they say they ended up the article by saying, we have no one in our public relations that can stand in the shadow of Albert Poggio in London. But the reality is that so long as they haven't got the passion that a Gibraltarian has for his homeland, then they will never succeed, because, you know, my skills is driven by the passion that I have for the job that I do and for my home, in keeping what we believe in, and that is what drives me. That is what drives most Gibraltarians, is passion. we're 30,000, but it's not the quantities of quality. So, you know, we've got to succeed in whatever we do, because we've got to prove to the outside world that, you know, that we are as good as they are.